Hey listeners, welcome to Trust in Tech, where we have conversations with folks helping the internet and society thrive. Today, we have a conversation with Nima Mojgani, who runs transparency reporting at Snap. We talk about the importance of transparency and the different forms that transparency comes in, including the traditional transparency reports, TikTok's Transparency Center, and GPT-4's system card. We also discuss whether transparency reports are just theater from powerful organizations or whether they have a meaningful impact. As a reminder, the views stated in this episode are not affiliated with any organization and only represent the views of the individuals. We hope you enjoy the show. What do you define as transparency?
Yeah, I think transparency has, you know, varying definitions for a lot of people. And it's an industry that's kind of starting to develop. It sits somewhere, you know, between privacy and safety. And for platforms, I think transparency can be defined as a way for them to, you know, build trust with users and civil society. And that, you know, in practice looks different for each platform. But I think the core tenets kind of remain the same, right? It's the practice of kind of synthesizing the work that you do and sharing them externally, right? Both from like a content moderation standpoint, operational standpoint, which is kind of the world that I'm in. But, you know, this also applies to the financial world and, you know, how you kind of put out the work that you're doing in that sense too. But again, a lot of my background is in the content moderation side of things.
I see. So I think there's this way of looking at transparency that has to do with power. So Essentially, it's a way of illuminating of institutions or actors or whatever platforms, governments, whatever you want to call them. They have some type of power asymmetry over another set of people. And transparency gives you a little window into what's going on there. Is that kind of how you see it between the platforms and civil society now? Or yeah, tell me more about that.
Yeah. I really love that framing because that power dynamic is so crucial, right? And I think it's been in a state for a very long time, right? Where, you know, if we take it back a few years, like the concept of transparency for platforms, it was relatively new, right? Speaking from, you know, Snap's perspective, you know, we released our first transparency report in 2015. I mean, I can dive into transparency reports a little bit later, but essentially that was one of our ways with sharing publicly in terms of, you know, how we engage with, you know, regulators and law enforcement in terms of, you know, the content efforts that we did, right? And this concept of power dynamics is really interesting, right? Because if you look at how users kind of use platforms, right, and understand the way that these function, there's not usually a ton of data in terms of, you know, the mechanisms of them, but things like transparency reports and, you know, open APIs and those things give that level of comfort for, you know, users and researchers to then understand kind of what's happening within the platform.
You said transparency reports and transparency APIs. Can you tell me what the distinguishment between those two is?
So a transparency report is essentially a document that platforms release that discloses key metrics and information about, you know, digital governance, enforcement measures, and policy maintenance. So in lay terms, right, that's like content moderation decisions and platform policies that, you know, platforms institute in order to, you know, funnel out content that violates their policies. A transparency report is essentially a report card of sorts. Mm-hmm. The way you can look at it is, you know, they'll publish out information around like, you know, this is the amount of content reports we got over a 6-month period. This is the number we took enforcement actions against. So in practice, that looks like, you know, we saw, I'm going to make up numbers, right? Like 2 million reports for hate speech on our platform. And we enforced against, you know, 1.2 million of them. And mm-hmm. then we also enforced against, you know, 500,000 accounts. And, you know, these are just data points to provide, you know, the public about, you know, how these platforms operate and how they kind of clean up bad content that exists on the platform in terms of how they define it, right?
Gotcha. And so what's the difference between that? And then what's the transparency API used for?
Yeah, when I say APIs, it's not really a transparency API. It's more so just like, you know, platforms releasing their APIs to give other, you know, others insight into like how their platforms function or how tools function. That's where we start to get into like some conversations that are happening in the zeitgeist a little bit around like algorithmic transparency, which has yet to be fully defined. But, you know, there's a lot of public desire to understand, you know, how do platforms algorithms work? And, you know, there's variance between how each platform, you know, wants to push back there because, you know, algorithms are complicated and, you know, giving them up can, you know, give up trade secrets of sorts. But that's the balance.
Is that true? Is that a thing? Like giving up your algorithm, is that a big trade secret for these platforms?
I think everyone will have a different opinion. I think it also depends on the platform.
There's like pretty public information about this, right? For Reels, right. It's based on subscribers. It's more follower or who you're following, based on who you're following, for more creators focused, whereas TikTok is more focused on just the content for the content's sake.
Right.
And that's interesting, right? Because that means that there's less, for Instagram, the influencers have more power because of this. And in TikTok, the creators have less power now, even because the power is more distributed. And I guess my point, that was a complete aside, but I guess my point being is some of this information is public. Mm-hmm. But if TikTok was to devolve, is to make it transparent, what was the inner workings of its algorithm, would Reels copy it? Would that work?
Yeah, no, I think that's a phenomenal question and one that's yet to be seen in practice, right? Because I think the level in which platforms are transparent about their you know, their algorithms vary. And I think, you know, it's within reason, right? And I think you can strike that balance. So taking your example, right, of like letting creators understand how to best utilize an algorithm, that's one aspect of it, right? And you can make the argument that like once folks start to gamify a platform and gamify the algorithm, then, you know, you could see new harms arise, actually, right? Like we're talking about it in a creator context, right? Mm-hmm. Where, you know, a creator with good faith will, you know, try to, you know, create content and distribute it to as many people as possible. But if we go to the flip side where like there's some of the, you know, the bad stuff on these platforms, right? Like let's take, for example, a terrorist organization, right? They try to amplify their voices by manipulating the algorithm. That's where you're going to see a lot of pushback. And that's frankly been the driving argument for a lot of these platforms when they-
But is that true? I haven't seen, like I've heard about this a lot, right? Like I work on content moderation at Facebook and we can go into transparency reports about this too, right? So for transparency reports, I remember reading the transparency report. And first of all, like no one cares about Marketplace. I worked at Marketplace. So it's not really segmented by the surface or the tab of Facebook that you're on. So it's not like transparent in that way. Yeah. But also like the policies internally and the externally facing policies are not always the same either. Mm-hmm. Or if they're the same, if they're not the same, they've been amalgamated in certain ways.
That is consistent across platforms from my understanding, right? Just from speaking with folks in the industry. It's like you want to provide a general high-level understanding of, you know, the platform policies that are in play so that users can understand, okay, you know, generally what's acceptable and what's not on the platform. And to your point of like what level of transparency is too much, I actually think this is an area where platforms haven't explored enough, right? It's like how much can we provide transparency here? And I think platforms should be willing to push the boundaries here. You know, if we want to take it further back in the conversation where we just started to talk a little bit about power dynamics, right? I think this is a very interesting frontier for platforms to push the boundaries on a little bit. I think, you know, a lot of platforms within reason take a conservative approach in terms of like how much platform policies do we want to put out there? How much guidance do we want to put out there? But I think it's important to start to, you know, one, speak to your platform policies at a very high level, and then two, start to give additional explanations around like how those are implemented operationally. Like, what does this look like from a content moderator's perspective? Without getting into, you know, you don't need to give the nitty gritty of like edge cases, right? Where it's like, oh, if it was, you know, this specific instance where like this was visible in the image or like this chat conversation happened and, you know, this specific word was said, like we don't need to give, you know, that total deep dive because I think that's worthless in the grand scheme of things. What's useful is, you know, what is the policy? What is like the range in which the policy is read? And how is it then applied for these platforms and for these moderators to then, you know, enforce against them? And then again, you know, this is kind of where transparency reports come back into play, right? Like this is the synthesis of that information. This is the output, the data that, you know, we're seeing in terms of how these platform policies are applied and why they're so useful for the public.
So why are these transparency reports important? Like have they led to downstream impact?
Yeah, totally. I mean, one, we're seeing a lot of pressure on them from a regulatory standpoint, right? Transparency reports, I think, are the primary ways, at least, you know, for better or worse, right, that both platforms and governments and the general public can kind of see how platforms are operating, both, again, from an operational and data standpoint. And, you know, with that working assumption, governments are then starting to develop a lot of regulations. The one that's coming down the pike that's quite large is the EU DSA, right? That's starting to mandate a lot of reporting requirements around transparency reporting, right? take it back to 2015. And again, using Snap as an example, you know, it was a voluntary report, right? And, you know, still for the most part is, but in some jurisdictions, they're starting to become mandated. And, you know, while this started as a you know, voluntary effort by a lot of companies, this is the key way in which governments have deemed that transparency is going to be seen by the public. So we're seeing regulations coming in terms of, you know, like how and what is being reported, you know, timetables for reporting and, you know, the need for auditing these reports, which, you know, I think is healthy for the ecosystem because it's, you know, bringing a lot more attention to the work that platforms are doing to, you know, balance user safety and privacy while also building, you know, engaging products. And I think that this is something that's been missing in the dialogue for the last few years that, you know, the public is rightly paying attention to.
So I guess it makes sense that the EU and the DSA Act wants to address the transparency reports, but have we seen these reports actually concretely lead to a certain action being made or citizens saying something or the discourse changing? What have we seen happen from these reports? Like, if we're going to spend so much time and investment into these reports, like, we want to, as opposed to, right? Because, like, these reports are only one mechanism. I mean, like, another interesting aspect of transparency is who are you being transparent for, right? You can be transparent for other experts in the field, and then it can be extremely complicated, right? Or you can be transparent for researchers, and that's out in the API. Or you can be transparent about what AI algorithms are using. That's a whole different audience. So if we're going to spend our resources for transparency, what specifically are these transparency reports? What have they done and what can they do? What can they unlock?
Yeah, I think those are both really good questions. And the way I think about them are both internally within the company, what effects can they have to, you know, change, make platform changes and decisions? And the second being externally, like how can we inform the public and, you know, basically make them more informed users for the products that are at play? And I'll go into both. I'll go into both a little more. So the first being internal, right? So by investing into these transparency reports, right, and having this higher scrutiny on it, it kind of forces a lot of our companies and platforms to really recognize, like, okay, like if we're seeing spikes in, for example, like sexual content or hate speech, we can then start to go backwards and like attribute that to some of the things that we've built over the last, you know, period in which the reporting happened, right? It's starting to provide metrics in order to allow these decisions to, in order for us to make better decisions moving forward. That being said, and I do want to caveat that with, there's a lot of mechanisms usually in place to catch these early on. Building things safely by design is very important. So making sure that when you're putting out a new product or feature, that it's built with the right audiences in mind and their safety and privacy in mind. I think transparency reporting is kind of the last ditch effort in that sense. To recognize those spikes, like it's way down the road. But that being said, it is a way for platforms to kind of understand, like, okay, if we're seeing increases in reporting across the board, something's happened, and you know we should start diving into those. So it forces a lot more accountability for the companies in that way. Externally, and going to a user and government and press and advertiser audience perspective, and even there, talking about all these different audiences, that's the tricky part too, right? It's like there's so many different people who digest this report. That I think for the longest time, platforms have tried to build these reports with all these different audiences in mind, right? And that's kind of the tricky thing where like there's no real solution there, right? In terms of like who the audience fully is. But in terms of just, let's speak generally for our users or for the public, right? By investing in these reports, you're enabling a clearer picture to the people who engage with these platforms about like what the bad stuff, quote unquote, that was caught is about these platforms. And not only that, right? Like if you look at these reports over time, you're seeing percent changes during each reporting period, right? Like if you saw a 10% increase in hate speech, right? Like there's some conclusions to be drawn there. And then creating these like regimens around like reporting and how these reports are read, I think are really important for the public because it'll allow them to make sense of these data changes, which, you know, each platform might speak to differently.
I actually read one of your trust framework piece from the Tech Coalition, and there you split the transparency reports into policies, processes, and outcomes. Yeah. Can you go a little in depth about what is transparency reporting for policies, what it is for processes, and what it is for outcomes?
Yeah, I can speak to that a little bit. And I want to give a huge shout out to the Tech Coalition with that too. That was really built with a working group of folks. I was just one of the people who helped draft it. And really the goal of that framework was to give platforms of all sizes kind of an entry foray into transparency reporting, because we know that developing a report is tough, right? It's not just, you know, publishing a report with data. It's figuring out, okay, like, where does this data exist? A lot of, like, I'm going to use the term immature, but that's not pejorative. It's just younger companies, right? When they're propping up a lot of these products and functions, these data points are kind of scattered across different CSVs, data sources, and compiling them can be really difficult. So the purpose of that trust framework was to give, you know, a little bit of guidance and a framework, for lack of a better word, for companies across the maturity scale, a way to kind of report on transparency metrics. And the trust framework really focused on child safety metrics, right? So that's a high level view, and you can find that report on the website for the Tech Coalition.
But we'll definitely add it to the show notes. How does the framework differ for children than it does for adults?
I don't think it really does differ, but it's more just like the actual data points that we recommended, right? And like you can still think about transparency reporting in that framework of policies, processes, outcomes. I'm just saying for that specific framework, we did focus it on child safety.
So then how did the data points change a bit for child safety?
Totally. So for child safety, we recommended a couple to start, right? It's like your total content enforcements for like CSAM, the total amount of accounts you deleted or enforced against for CSAM, as well as the total number of submissions you made to NCMEC, which is the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, right? And CSAM being child sexual abuse material. But you could make the argument that the data points could still be applied to other harms. I fully agree with you there. And that's kind of how we think about it. That's kind of how I think about it, right? Like if you were to apply that breakdown to, let's take a category again, like, I don't know, like harassment, right? You could refer to it as like, okay, how many content and account reports did we receive for harassment, right? How many pieces of content did we enforce for harassment? How many accounts did we enforce against for harassment? And those three breakdowns, those three, you know, categories provides a pretty sharp lens into, you know, the general type of enforcement work that's being done operationally to harassment. Now, you can always go deeper, right? Like we can start to split out harassment into very specific types of harassment and bullying. We could break it out by different demographics, right? And again, it all depends on where your platform sits on the maturity level, like framework in terms of how spliced your data is. And it also depends on, like, you know, it differs from platform to platform, right? Because going back to those breakouts of policies, processes, and outcomes, your platform policies will differ. You know, different platforms will have different policies around harassment. Whereas CSAM, I think, is pretty cut and dry. You know, there's a lot more, you know, it's a lot more cut and dry, to put it as such. Processes too, operationally, I think each platform will have differences in processes, but the goal is really to emphasize, like, hey, like let's talk about the processes. Let's be transparent and speak like this is how our content moderation framework is set up. And lastly, about the outcomes are really the final data points, right? So again, showing transparency across your policies. So what are your platform policies? And then two, going to the processes, how are your policies implemented and enforced against? And three, the outcomes of, you know, what are the data points that were the outcome of those processes and policies? That kind of funnel and pipeline, I think, is a very high level look at transparency that can be applied to all these different categories of violations for platforms.
Yeah, I think that's a super helpful framework to see it. I just can't help but like somewhat feel that since these are self-directed initiatives early, and maybe now they're kind of getting a little more, governments are trying to, and let's say the, like not very fast, around 8 years later, right? 2015 was SNAP's initial transparency report, 2023 is when the DSA is going to be enacted, or maybe a year or two later. I don't know. Anyways, not the point. Point is, my point is, it seems almost as a way to avoid other, is this self-regulation to avoid other regulation? Is this transparency theater? Like in the transparency reports, like I don't particularly see what the infrastructure structure looks like. I don't see the algorithmic transparency. I don't see what the processes are. I don't see the people that work on them. I don't see the way that the governance of not just the infrastructure, but also of the teams, what they look like, who the integrity teams or other content moderation, who they report to, because that makes a massive difference too, right? For example, if a content moderation team reports to a product team, they're always going to be sidelined, right? But what if they report to the transparency team or a security team, their metrics are elevated, right? So it's like, I can't help but not, maybe not pushback is the right word, but have this feeling that transparency reports are some type of theater, especially when they're so amorphous right now. When the policies are, right, like if they become regulated, right, like it's going to be, harassment's going to be like, oh, like look, harassment's gone down, but then maybe harassment's policies change later on, right?
And to your points, right? So I think to take a wide step back, right? Like, is it theater? Is it, you know, just self-regulation? This is where I would say that, like, this is where the regulation piece is actually quite important, because, you know, it's bringing more attention from the public in a sense that, like, you know, platforms should not just always wholly define what is right and what is wrong. There needs to be a little bit more of an investment from, you know, public to kind of engage with this stuff. I will push back on the sense that, like, you know, platform policies will differ from platform to platform. And I don't think you can create, like, an overarching framework on what everyone agrees is harassment, right? Or what everyone agrees is sexual content, right? There's always going to be edge cases. And it's kind of an ongoing effort within these platforms to catch, define, operate against them, and create a data output. Now, to your point of, like, getting more nuanced, or I guess nuance isn't the right word, but more detailed in terms of, like, transparency around things that aren't just data points of, like, content moderation, like, you know, what are corporate structures and, you know, those types of things. I do think those are helpful. I think a transparency report is one component in a wider, you know, transparency ecosystem of a platform to build trust. Because when we look at the report, right, it's meant to serve as, like, the component that's, like, data driven, operationally driven, and policy driven. Obviously, your community guidelines come into play, your terms of service come into play, and all these different things that make your platform exist and the rules about it exist. Like, these are all commingled. I think the problems that platforms have faced up until this point is, like, how do we synthesize that and make it digestible for a reader? And in a way that's, you know, doesn't come off as theater, that's actually highlighting the work that's being done within the platform fairly. And this is where I think, you know, a lot of the regulations coming in, right, with, like, they're going to be conducting audits around transparency reports, right, to make sure that they follow a certain set of criteria and guidelines, to make sure that data controls are in place, to make sure that process controls are in place, so that you can't just, like, string together, you know, some random string of numbers and say, oh, yeah, they probably went up because more people joined the platform. You know, you can't just make stuff up. Right. There's going to be a lot. There's going to be a lot more rigor than there was before. But, you know, there's always developments to be made. I think a really good example and counterpart to this that we can look at is, like, the evolution of, like, carbon accounting and how, like, that's evolved over the last few decades. Right. This whole ecosystem of, like, ESG reporting, non-financial reporting, transparency reporting, I think is part of that. And the developments we'll see in this space of transparency reporting, I think, are going to mirror carbon accounting. And I'm not going to pretend to be an expert in that space, but at a very high level, we started with, you know, people reporting on it because they thought it would put them at an advantage to their users for them to see, like, hey, you know, this is what we generally do with our carbon emissions and how we control them. Eventually, to the point where governments started to take interest and develop really rigorous frameworks around how to account and the best ways to do so and the best practices. And I think we're going to get there with transparency. So it's an evolving space, and it requires the partnership of platform, civil society, governments, users, to take it to a good spot. And I think platforms, frankly, can only do so much if they're operating in a vacuum.
Yeah. You mentioned two interesting points. We'll get them one by one. I think one is the evolving ecosystem of transparency. And the other thing is that platforms can only do so much. Let's start with the evolving ecosystem of transparency. We've had two fun happenings in the news this week, right? Maybe last GPT-4 was last week. Everything blends together at this point. But GPT-4 was released, and they also released a system card with it. So the system card being not just the model itself, but being like, this is the whole system. The system, we red teamed against this. It has this bias. These are the cybersecurity concerns. These are the privacy concerns. This is not one-to-one with social media platforms, for sure. But is this the next evolution in transparency reporting, is releasing these system cards where you have this, maybe GPT-4 has the state of the art when it comes to transparency reporting? Honestly, I don't think so, because they didn't say anything about the parameters in the model, because they went from an open source or open AI to bought by Microsoft AI. Right. But that's besides the point.
And I mean, to that point, though, right? It's like, it's a phenomenal tool, right? And I think the way we can look at a lot of transparency report, transparency efforts generally, as, you know, for lack of a better phrasing, a way to be transparent about something that's being done within a company, right? And a system card of like what GPT-4 has put out is like one component in a wider transparency ecosystem for how they're sharing the work they're doing. A transparency report, I still think, is like quite different from this. And I think, you know, at some point, ChatGPT should put out a transparency report of, you know, how their systems were abused by users, rather than just these are the inputs of how the system was built, right? Because one is looking at how the system was abused now that it is out into the public and being actively used. The other is, this is how we built it from the ground up, not intending for abuse to happen. So one's more reactive, one's more proactive, but both are necessary to contribute to this dialogue of transparency for these platforms.
Gotcha. Yeah, so that was one part of it. And then the other one was TikTok had the testimony in Congress, right? But the one big thing they noted was the security risks with sharing data with the Chinese government, basically, right? I guess that just comes down to what transparency is. It circles back to what we started in the beginning, where TikTok right now has a lot of power within the United States, right? Like,
yeah,
was it two-thirds of people, I think it's under 25 or under 18, don't want TikTok to be banned, when one-third do. It's has millions, 150 million users. And none of these users or even creators are very powerful, as you mentioned before. There doesn't seem to be any accountability metrics here. And then they have this transparency theater-esque, transparency center. But I don't know, does that lead to any, has that led to any regulation? Like, I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, no, I think these are all valid, very valid questions. Gosh, where do I start with that? I think so. In terms of the hearing on the Hill today, I think it was, you know, a fairly hostile hearing too. It was like very pointed. I think they had a lot of fair criticisms about the platform. I think it's the same with most congressional hearings, right? Where I feel like a lot of senators and
but they're acting in their own theater too. But that's also
they're doing their own exactly right yeah. Where they're performing their own theater, but at the same time, like, they're not well informed. And they're using it as a chance to just get their points across. And, you know, a lot of times I don't think the CEO actually had to respond, because they were just the people in Congress were just making their own points and running with whatever they wanted to run with. So I think the hearing in and of itself was very hostile, but at the same time, some people on the Hill were misinformed. Some actually were, I thought, fairly well informed in their questioning. But at the same time, like, I don't know what the outcome is in terms of like the changes that will happen. I think we'll see. I think these types of hearings are becoming more and more commonplace. And frankly, transparency reports will be one metric they point to, or one like tool they point to, in order to get data.
It's a tool for them to kind of be like, okay, hey, this and this is happening on your platform. What have you done with it?
Right. And I think the problem too is like when data changes happen period over period, I think a lot of assumptions can be made, right? That I think the responsibility and onus falls on the platforms to kind of help elucidate. But then we have like this trust disparity a lot of times between platforms and the public, where it's like, okay, can we trust that what you're reporting out is actually the way it's meant to happen, right? So like,
how do we address that trust, right? So
yeah,
since 2015, when the transparency reports came out, I can only imagine that platforms have lost trust. Or not platforms, people have lost trust in the platforms. Like, totally. The transparency reporting definitely hasn't helped there. Or maybe it has helped. I don't know. Maybe people shouldn't trust those platforms that much. What can small and medium platforms do to make it easier to make these reports? Because from what I understand, right, it's like you have a whole internal set of metrics, and then you need to convert them into an external set of metrics. You have internal policies, you need to convert them to external policies.
Well, it depends platform to platform, right? Like, some platforms just report out straight up. Like, we have a reporting reason for hate speech. This is the total number of reports we got. This is the total number of ones we enforced against. This is the unique accounts enforced. That's what it is. Then you have other platforms that kind of like have to blend data together in order to get a certain like conglomerate, right? And I don't think this is like unique to any one platform that's more or less immature, right? Like, if you're a very mature platform, for example, like the concept of sexual content might have like 10 to 20 different sub layers, right? And then you need to pick apart those different, you know, data points and then blend them together. Whereas, you know, if you're a less mature platform, you might just, you know, not have a very split apart reporting menu, and you might have something for sexual content, you might have something for nudes, and you might have something for sexual exploitation, and you just decide to combine them all, right?
Yeah, I wonder if like, yeah. So as context, I also worked on reducing human exploitation at Facebook. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that one of the escalations was there were passports being sold in like Dubai and like,
sure. Yeah.
Like, or with foreign workers. I guess like the thing is if there's a transparency report, the platform has an incentive to not put those passports under human exploitation when they're clearly under human exploitation, because then in the report cards per se, it'll look like that their human exploitation on the platform went up without the nuance of the platform, the policy changing. But the policy changing matters too, because internally these policies are used to address the harm associated with to attach a weight,
yes.
Essentially, basically, like how important is this harm?
The part of that I'll push back on is like the assumption that it's actually not good for these platforms to report that out because they don't want to necessarily be associated with it, right? I think I hear you that like the take is generally like, oh, like this is a bad thing, that like this is a very awful thing that happened, and we should minimize the amount it looks like we're facilitating something like incredibly illegal. I think that framework is a little outdated because, you know, they're not necessarily facilitating it. It's occurred, but they need to take action on it, right? And that's, you know, what's being done across these platforms, right? Like when these things occur, like when like non-consensual intimate imagery or human trafficking or any of these like violative or even CSAM, right? Like these illegal processes are happening. Like it is the responsibility of the platforms, in my opinion, to act on these. And I think that's the problem with a lot of integrity work, just generally across the board, like taking a step back from transparency, right? It's like a constant back and forth of good people trying to build mechanisms and frameworks to protect users, and then people who are trying to exploit those things being built to exploit other people or do terrible, awful things. So it's this constant back and forth of, you know, trying to build something proactively and then someone reactively responding, and then you just keep going back and forth. Now, where the report, the transparency report comes in terms of like couching that data and like, you know, explaining that data, I agree with you. It can go a couple of ways, right? Like say, you know, taking that human trafficking example, if we saw a 20% increase in human trafficking, there's a lot of things that could have happened, right? It could be that maybe, you know, we have built machine learning that can catch those fake passports or something on the platform much faster than we could before. So that stuff already existed. We're just getting better at catching it. Or alternatively, someone found an exploit and we actually saw an increase of a spam attack or something where people were just exploiting something differently. There's so many different explanations that I think you can make the argument platforms in the past have, you know, spun one way or another to fit their framework. But I think that's where a lot of the regulation is going to come in. And with these auditors, these audit processes coming in, they'll actually provide a secondary attestation that will make it seem like, hey, like what did actually happen?
So what other regulations are coming in for these transparency reports? What other issues exist currently for these transparency reports?
Yeah, I think the big one, frankly, is the EU DSA. There's a lot of little ones that are happening both in the US at a state level, federal. I mean, there's just so much gridlock that nothing's being passed on a federal level. There's stuff happening in California, Texas, just around general platform safety. And usually transparency reporting is either like a sub clause or something within there. A lot of those at the state level are just starting to mandate them generally in terms of like, you know, report on them in a 6-month period. These are the general categories. And it also depends on like the size of platform you are, right? Like if you're a platform that only has like a couple thousand users, you probably don't qualify. If you have a couple million, you probably do qualify. And then the gray area is somewhere in between that, you know, I think a lot of states and places are trying to figure out. The EU DSA is the big one where, you know, they're basically calling out not just, you know, social media, but they're going for any intermediary that basically facilitates communication to have a report of sorts.
Wow. So like maybe Google would fall under this then.
Google would definitely fall under this.
ChatGPT would probably fall under this too then.
Yeah, I'm no lawyer and I haven't read the DSA in full, to be quite frank. But from my understanding, a lot of intermediary platforms that facilitate communication would be beholden to a lot of these regulations. A lot of the core differences being when things go into effect and to what extent are you, you know, mandated to do things, right? Like if you're of a certain size, you probably won't be you know, constrained to an audit of your transparency report, but you will likely need to put one out, if that makes sense.
Gotcha. So then how do we make these transparency reports better than they currently are? What's the current issues that exist that we can really push against to make them more actionable?
Yeah, I think that's a phenomenal question, and that's the million-dollar question. I think it really starts with more resources for platforms and the public. So what I mean by that, right, is like a lot of platforms in the process of building their companies don't necessarily take integrity work into the forefront, right? They're focused on growing and building and, you know, putting together a product and then selling it, that they don't take the time to build them with like safety. They don't build them with like safety and design by mind or privacy by design in mind. They build them to build them. So I think the first step is really just like understanding how can your platform be abused and bringing people into the conversation early on to first pinpoint those areas where your platform can be abused. The second is resources around like actual transparency report building and like what it takes to build that, like a transparency report. The trust framework is just one example. And I think a lot of people are trying to build different frameworks, but I think it really boils down to a couple key things, right? It's like, one, understanding where does your data flow from? Like, what are all the different data streams that are used to understand like where abuse happens? And I think even a step before that is understanding where does your platform get abused? And like, how does that reporting come inbound? Then we start getting into, you know, beyond the reporting element, like how do you even publish the report? Like, do you have the web tools in your company? Like, do you have a website that you want to put it on? Do you want to put it in a PDF? The tools it takes to, you know, bring in comms folks to like help you talk about the data in a way that, you know, your company is comfortable with, because these are the conversations integrity folks have to have, right? It's like, you have to have that pushback where it's like, what can we publish? And I think for the most part, the landscape has evolved where it's like, from my understanding and speaking with folks across the industry, like it's okay to be transparent. Like that is the direction we want to go. And frankly, that's the direction I think advertisers are pushing for too. Transparency reports and transparency as a whole is like so key for brand safety that like to not be transparent.
Why is it key for brand safety?
Well, I mean, you know, if we think about brand safety, right, and like take a simple concept, like if we look at like ad adjacency, right, like making sure that your advertisements are not near violating content, to have an understanding of how much violating content even occurred on the platform is, I think, a big step for advertisers to understand, like, okay, like what is the scale of harm? That's why different metrics in the report, right? Like, let's take Meta.
Yeah, the metrics have like, they have prevalence and stuff, but they don't have like how many views did this piece of violating content get before it got taken down. Like, I think that's a big missing one too, right?
Some do. And that's kind of the discrepancy between transparency reports, right? Like different platforms are at different maturity levels, so they're able to report on different metrics. And going to
like a public interest technology, right? Like a open source, here's how to build a transparency. Here's some code to build a transparency framework. Okay, anyways, quick aside.
No, I fully agree with that. And making that more accessible and usable for these different companies, I think mainly for the small to medium ones that are going to be beholden to this legislation a few years down the line, because, you know, it usually starts with a larger fish, test it out for a bit, and then it'll start to spread. So making sure that these resources are in place by, you know, different organizations, I think are huge. I think that's frankly the big one, like making sure that like you understand, you know, how to set up these data pipelines, making sure how do you synthesize the data, making sure how do you speak to the data. And then eventually, you know, you'll have a semblance of a report. I think the tricky part then becomes as you start to add new features to your product, like how do you then account for them in the report? And that differs platform to platform, frankly, right? You know, enforcing content on a video sharing platform versus a text-based platform, you have different platform policies, you have different operations and processes, and as a result, you have different outputs. So while I say that there could be more resources for platforms and general frameworks, and maybe this is a hot take, I don't think there will ever be a one-size-fits-all transparency reporting framework, because there's so many different types of companies with so many different pieces of content with different types of policies. But what we can provide is general guidelines and, you know, directionality for how to report out, you know, very general metrics around your own bespoke platform policies or ones that are coming down the pike from a legislative perspective that will make sure, one, you're, you know, ready to face those regulation, but two, also developing an accurate assessment and portrayal of your platform and how it's been abused to your users in an effort to, you know, be transparent and build trust.
Gotcha. And then how's this information not going to be used by the competitors or taken advantage of by the competitors? Why are the companies like not scared of this or shouldn't be scared of this?
Yeah, I think it goes down to the root of like, each platform is like inherently different. I think I will caveat that with, I think the one difficult part is algorithmic transparency. I think we talked about that a little bit earlier. It's like, how do you frame it in a way that, you know, provides user comfort in like what they're seeing or like how they're being served content without disclosing how to build it, right? And how they people have made it work the way it has. That being said, I think there's a way to frame it in a way, or framing is not the right word, but it's like, how do you present the nuts and bolts of your like content moderation effort? Again, your policies, your processes, and your outcomes in a way that's, you know, showing insight into each of these and how they were developed, and two, how they're actually actioned on. So, and again, I think it varies so much platform to platform that the competitive advantage, you do need to weigh the risk of like, am I giving up a competitive advantage or am I building more trust with my users to feel comfortable in using my product? And that's the trade-offs that the platforms weigh. But my take is that the amount of, you know, benefit you're going to see from like being transparent and open with your, one, your users, and two, your advertisers, and three, with like the general public, like regulators and folks who frankly don't even use your platform, I think that goes a long way in making sure that like you are seen as a platform that is doing the right thing, because you're trying to by putting out this data for the world to see.
What about global reporting? How does that work on a non-US, non-EU, non-Western level?
Yeah, great question. I do think that a lot of transparency reports for platforms, from my understanding, they're presented at a global level. So you'll see like the total amount of, you know, going back to like the harassment and harassment example, it's at, you'll see the global figures for like total reports or total enforcements, whatever. One thing I'm really proud of what we've been able to build at Snap is we've actually gone into like the country level and provided nuance to not just, you know, what is the total amount of reports and content deletions or whatever in the US or in, you know, France, but we'll also break it down by like each different listed harm or platform policy. So you can see the full range of, you know, violations per country level. And I think that's a direction that, not to speak to Snap's maturity relative to others, I think that's a direction a lot of platforms could go, where, you know, you're not just providing transparency at a global level, because each country has their own nuances in terms of how platforms are used and frankly abused, that it's important to see how platforms differ in different environments. And the way to do that is to present data within a transparency report, I think, to really showcase that.
Yeah, I think that's important. I think some of the, like even for example, the Rwandan genocide, right? It came with from a new technology, right? It came from radio. It's a very important discourse to make sure that the transparency is also there on a global level, not just for the US.
Yeah. And not just globally from the standpoint of like at net, you know, global, like here's all the data. It's more like, no, for each individual country you're operating in, how can you provide assurance to those users? And, you know, those governments or the press in that country, the advertisers there, that, you know, what your, you know, policies, processes, and outcomes kind of are. And I think country level reporting is like the first step in that direction. And being able to speak to that, I think is really, really important for all those different stakeholders.
Can you put it on a more state by state level in the US, or a more granular level in besides country?
I think it's possible. It depends on the platform, right? Mm-hmm. I think in terms of like how platforms geolocate and, you know, where you exist, right? Like here's where like the tricky accounting bits of transparency reporting come in, right? Like, you know, if say, you know, I'm using an app and I'm in California today and I see some like hateful content and I report it, and then I fly to DC or some other state the next day, and then the report that I submitted was enforced, how are you accounting for that, right? Like, do you then submit one report in California under the state level and then one enforcement in, you know, DC or something?
Yeah, honestly, you just hope that they average out at that point, the migrations. No, but that's very legitimate. I remember we had a bug related to that to Facebook, where it was essentially that people were spoofing. It wasn't a bug. I guess it was more of a attack vector. It was people were spoofing US location to circumvent some classifiers, because we had some geographically based classifiers for specific problems. And it's the same thing. It's like, oh, but like, what if this person like was in one location before, but in another location before? We can't just take down everyone that's ever going to take a plane too, you know?
And these are the type of things that I think, I don't know if governments will ever create like accounting principles to that granularity to say like, no, this is exactly how you do it if that specific scenario happens. I think what's important is if platforms are seeing these issues occur or these types of like nuances and discrepancies occur, they highlight and outline, okay, this is something that occurs with our data and this is how we treat it in those instances. And being able to like speak to those instances like as they come up, frankly. Because again, it goes back to this like back and forth of like, you know, reactively being able to respond to ways that your platform is being used.
Okay, I gotcha. Well, thank you, Nima, for coming on the show. Had a pleasure. Learned a lot about transparency.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was fun.
Yeah, thank you. If you enjoyed today's conversation, please share this episode to your friends so we can continue making episodes like this. Today's episode was produced by me, Talha Baig. Music by Zhao Shen. And special thanks to Sahar, Cass, Rachel, and Sean for their continued support.